Welcome back, one and all, to the best seat at the track. You already know it is the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Davey Siegel, as always. We got a good friend on the show in Zach Sturdiolo, as always, with a big announcement from him. Stay tuned for the end on that. And a great interview from BJ and Jessica McLeod of Live Fast Motorsports. They are the dynamic duo that no one might be talking about, but you will be hearing from them for years to come. Plus, Daytona 500 recap, Fontana preview, everything in between. Let's get it rolling.
Boogity, let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast this week, and the Daytona 500, the 64th annual running of it, as Zach waves the proverbial flag in the air. It is come and gone. Zach, you covered this event for the first time in your journalistic career. What'd you think?
Man, what an experience. What a privilege it was to be there, honestly. A sold-out crowd, and you felt it. You felt it all day Sunday, but honestly, the atmosphere was kind of peaked all week. We were fortunate enough to be there on Tuesday of last week, all the way through every practice session, every qualifying session, every race, all the way through the 500. And there was just there was something in the air all week that just made it feel like the huge event that it is. It was special to be there. Seeing the Thunderbirds go by over the sold out crowd, every seat in that place having a person in it. It was a great experience. And on top of that, we had great racing, I thought, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and really Thursday, even if you include the duels.
You know what wasn't in the air that made the weekend so good? Rain.
Amen.
Can we clap it up for that? I'm clapping on my leg. There you go.
There we go.
I mean, we booked our flights back on Tuesday for one reason, essentially, and that was because of the threat of rain, since it's wreaked havoc on the race the last 2 years. I had been burned before. I don't want to be burned again. So I said, you know what? I'm going to play it safe. I hope that this won't matter, and I'll just go to the champions breakfast and enjoy the beach, which we did. But the only time it rained throughout all of Speed Weeks was a light drizzle, I think Thursday or Friday morning.
I think it was actually Saturday morning, right before a cup practice.
Okay, yeah. Whatever it was a light drizzle, and it only delayed the session 10 minutes. Other than that, no weather interference all weekend, which I cannot stress enough from a logistical perspective, from people that are balling on a budget. That is such a big deal, and it was such a breath of fresh air, literally.
No, it really was. It was gorgeous. I was surprised how perfect the weather was.
We got sunburned. We got very sunburned, Zach.
Listen, we're a couple of pasty dudes. It was bound to happen regardless.
Pasty Jewish white man. What can you say?
It's what we do. We burn in the sun, man. It just happens.
Yes, we do.
it's amazing that we got as lucky as we did the entire week. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous weather. Even on Monday, we had really a day to burn. Not sunburn, but
we did.
Like you said, we went to the champions breakfast in the morning with Austin Cindric.
Great food that, there, by the way, huh?
It was great. I was just so thankful that it was as nice as it was.
Yeah. I was really thankful for it too. I'm curious because, you know, I kind of felt like a dad shepherding their son around for the first time, like at this big race. You know, I'm like telling you where to go. I'm like, let's go here. Let's do this. You want to do this? You're so wide-eyed. You're so eager. You're ready to rock and roll. And it kind of let me see the race for the first time from a media perspective through your eyes, which was really fun. And since I've done it for a handful of years, I'm curious, since it was your first time, what was your favorite part of the whole week?
It's a great question. And I think part of it was really just walking the grid pre-race on Sunday. It was packed. You really couldn't hardly move around. And they had the cars all the way lined up, onto the short chute leading between turns four and the trial. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people all the way back from Jacques Villeneuve's car all the way up to Kyle Larson's car and well past toward the start finish line. It's just this swarm of people, and you just feel the energy building for what's going to be this massive event. And experiencing that in person, there's really nothing that I can describe that's like it.
So let's talk about the race itself, Zach. Austin Cindric obviously is your winner, his eighth career Cup Series start. All he does is go out and win the Daytona freaking 500 as a rookie. Not super too bad casual. Of a start to the year. Yeah, pretty casual, I'd say.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a fantastic race, and a very well-driven race by Cindric specifically. Right off the bat, he picked up where he left off on Thursday, which was pushing Brad Keselowski very aggressively. The first, like, 30 or so laps of that race, he was right on Keselowski's tail, pushed him hard, kept up front. I felt like that two car was in the top five literally all day long, which feels damn near impossible at a super speedway. But he did it. And then he managed that final green, white checkered run just perfectly. He had Ryan Blaney, his teammate, right behind him. They stayed together perfectly. Blaney goes to make the move entering the tri-oval. Cindric comes up just enough to slow that run down and then comes back down, blocks that run from Bubba Wallace right at the line. It looked like it was a veteran driver. It didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I was watching a rookie, but he was excellent, I thought, all race long.
And it's not his first time having success at super speedways and at Daytona. He won the Beef, It's What's for Dinner, 300 last year. So he obviously knows what it takes to get it done on these type of tracks. But it goes without saying, the Cup Series is just so different. The competition is more stout. The race is a bigger deal. It's longer. Different
the cars are different.
A brand new car, exactly. So the fact that he made it look as easy as it was, or it looked, I think that speaks volumes to what we may see from him down the road this year and for years and years to come, because he's with an organization that obviously is not going anywhere anytime soon, and I don't think he is either.
That's true, and I feel like a lot of times with Austin Cindric, within the NASCAR community itself, there's a lot of talk about the nepotism, right, because he's Tim Cindric's son and all of those things that come along with that. But what people fail to mention when we're talking about that is the fact that this kid has gone on to win the Xfinity Series Championship in 2020. He was about half a car length shy of it in Phoenix last year from being a two-time champion. He's done remarkably well to improve himself on literally every track type. And he's a legitimate threat to win, or has been a legitimate threat to win on multiple different track types throughout his Xfinity Series career, and has showed signs of that same thing carrying over to the Cup Series. He obviously had 7 starts last year in Cup. Not a ton of results to show for it.
He was doing really well at Road America before his car kind of crapped out on him. You remember that?
He absolutely was. Absolutely was. I think that kid is poised for a solid season. We obviously know he's going to be in the playoffs, right? But does he get back to victory lane? I'm not too sure of that. He doesn't really have to now, though. That's the beauty of this, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple things there. I mean, the nepotism part of it, that's always going to be there. It always has been, and he hasn't shied away from it, right? I mean, he said a couple times, he's not an externally motivated person. He's internally motivated. And Tim Cindric and his mom, they did not want him to become a race car driver. They wanted the opposite. And Austin, you know, to his credit, said, no, I want to do this. I understand that it's going to be hard, even though my dad's the president of the company and the label's going to be attached to me. But you guys remember a few years ago in that 60 Xfinity car, he was dog you know what. I mean, anybody that got in that car was, but he was one of those drivers. And he went to work, did his homework, got schooled a lot, and came back stronger, as cliche as that is. So I think that the nepotism can be put to bed if it hadn't already been, because the fact that he's a one-time and arguably should be two-time Xfinity champ, now a Daytona 500 champ. I had him pegged to win a race this year on a road course, but I think one for one, that's a pretty damn good way to start out. And then the other thing that I want to mention, Zach, is the next-gen car, because this obviously was not the debut. We saw it at the Clash in LA, and we saw it a couple days prior at the Duels, but for a points-paying race that's an actual race, this was kind of the debut of the car. And you know, we're going to see how it performs on mile and a half and Fontana this weekend. But overall, there were some kinks that needed to be and still do need to be worked out. Obviously, Justin Haley and Kaz Grala's wheels falling off, that's never good. Harrison Burton getting airborne, that's never good. But overall, I think NASCAR probably leaves Daytona feeling okay. I would lean towards pleased with the next-gen car. Again, some kinks to iron out here with the flipping and the wheels falling off, but you're going to get that when you debut a new car. Cole Custer had a fueling issue. I think overall, though, NASCAR's got to be pretty pleased with how the car performed, how it looked, and the optics of it all, wouldn't you?
I would agree with all of that. I think to me, the wheels and the flat tires are something that are more interesting to me. We saw a couple it looked like the wheel, the part that holds the wheel in on that right front for Justin Haley was something broke
Yeah, it
there.
was weird.
I'm
It was
not sure
like
exactly
for
what
the
happened.
50, the whole wheel and tire came off, but then for the
Yeah.
31, the tire came off, but the wheel itself, the aluminum wheel, broke. I think that's what it
Yeah,
was.
it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So they're gonna have to get that figured out. I also don't love the fact that when guys like Joey Logano spun into the grass, or Alex Bowman, or no, I'm sorry, Bowman's car was destroyed. But like, I think Ross Chastain was trying to drive his car back, but then has to get out of the car because there was nothing left on it. As far as the tires go. We used to be able to see these guys kind of limp the car around if they had a flat tire. We didn't really see that. If they got stuck, actually, no, it was Bowman and Logano both wound up multiple laps down just trying to get back to their pit boxes just because they had flat tires. So I don't
Yeah,
love
and
that.
we were talking about that. Joey and Reddick were stuck in the front stretch grass on the tri-oval, and you made a
Yeah.
really good point, which I didn't think of, with this new 18-inch diameter or whatever the specifications are of the tires. There's less actual tire. Like the tire rubber itself is less, so you can't necessarily dig into the grass to spin yourself out of it.
Yeah, so there's more width of the tire, but there's less sidewall. And
Correct.
so because there's less height there, you're basically as soon as that tire's flat, you're on the rim already. And even if you have an inner liner there, you're not able to kind
But
of
there
just.
are no inner liners, right?
Oh,
I
that's
don't
right.
think there
That,
are.
no, you're right. You're right. I forgot
It's
about
just an
that.
adjustment period for everybody.
Yeah, so that'll be something to get used to. But I say all those things. This next gen car was a complete success in my opinion. Yes, there's things to work on, but the car raced well. That looked like a Daytona 500 to me. I thought it was a great race just in general, but it looked like a Daytona 500. You had different style of super speedway racing than we've seen the last couple of years, where that tandem was actually effective, but not in a way that would separate you from the rest of the pack. But all in all, I thought this was a phenomenal debut for a super speedway with a next gen car. I'm curious to see what we get over these next 3 weeks with Fontana, Vegas, and Phoenix coming up because we get to the more traditional tracks on the circuit. But so far, so good.
Zach, we've got to pay some bills, but if you're cool with sticking around, we'll do that. We'll come back. We'll talk to Jessica and BJ McLeod. How does that sound?
Well, let's do it.
Front Stretch Podcast is brought to you in part by Sousa Media, owned and operated by Kyle Sousa. Sousa Media services over 25 clients with social media management, website services, press releases, marketing, branding, whatever you want. Sousa Media's got you covered. You got three-time Modified Tour champ Justin Bonsignor, Mr. Six-time and SRX winner Doug Kobe, Derek Griffith, Patrick Emmerling, plus Seekonk and Star Speedway are part of the Sousa Media empire. And if you want to learn more about it, visit them on Facebook or at kylesouza.com. Again, Sousa Media, changing the media landscape. Let's throw it over to our chat with Jessica and BJ McLeod of Live Fast Motorsports, the dynamic duo that you may know about, but let's get to know them on a personal and professional level. Jessica was recently announced as the CEO of Live Fast Motorsports, a title, as she and BJ explain here, is basically a formality. She's already been doing the work, and that this was about recognizing her for that work. She's the first female CEO of a NASCAR team. And they wanted that to become public, and they wanted to make that known that Jessica has been working, will continue to work, and that should be recognized. So we talked about that. We talked about them working as a couple and how their relationship has morphed from first they were dating, then they became teammates in life, and now they have been and will be teammates on the racetrack in a professional sense. Plus, LiveFest has realistic expectations, as we know. They're not going to go out there and win every single weekend. So what are their realistic expectations? Where do they want to finish week to week? How about in the point standings? What do they think is a success, and what are they aiming for? All those answers and more in this chat, the second week in a row that we got an in-person interview. Here's our chat with BJ and Jessica McLeod of Live Fast Motorsports. I have found Live Fast Motorsports dynamic duo, BJ McLeod and Jessica McLeod, the newly named CEO. BJ was actually just telling us that you love Media Day. It's your favorite media day of the year?
It is. You know, it's funny because I don't think it's a big secret that I'm not too good with social media or any of that stuff. I'm trying to get better. But, you know, I always look forward to Daytona 500 Media Day like the most of all year because it means we're back at the racetrack with a racing family and getting ready to roll, right? Like, I'm not a fan of the off season really. Like, we got to have it. You got to let people reset. I mean, it's a necessary evil, but I'm born to race, man. So it's like this media day is like the first part of making sure we're back at the track and ready to go.
What is your new role as a CEO for Media Day?
So new role for CEO on Media Day. Well, I'm usually more behind the scenes.
Right.
So yeah, so he gets to do all the talking and interviews, but this is new for me. just excited to be back here racing. That's the biggest thing. Like he said, we have the off season. It's off, but a lot of work gets done in the off season. So excited to see it come together for Sunday.
And I know that, Jessica, when you were announced as the CEO, it was not really necessarily anything new because you guys have been working together for as long as you guys have been together, essentially. But now that it's, I guess, officially official and you guys are working together, has the relationship changed? I know the answer, but people are wanting to know these things.
No, we have been in business together for a long time, so it's nothing new. I know that's everybody's question just because we've come out with it more here lately. On the BJ McLeod Motorsports side, I've been in that role the whole time, you know, as owner as well. Live Fast side, it's funny, we have tough conversations, but we also know how to have business hat, and then our relationship's different, you know, so we know how to switch them on and off. So I would say it's not different. I mean, we're so used to it.
Yeah. I guess to add to it, it's just the thing you have to find is a way to separate work and personal whenever you do both together. So, you know, we've been together 19 years and March 22nd, and we've also been in business about 18 years and 6 months, right? Like in different forms. And it through the time, you know, I really would say that we didn't ever have to worry about separating business and work until probably last 6 or 7 years when it got really stressful when we started the Xfinity program. We got to levels that we had dreamed of getting to, but you know that put a whole another hindrance on a relationship, right? Like it definitely was a new level of stress, a new level of risk, and it was a difficult situation to try to navigate that because everything we had done before together, I never really felt, and I don't think she did either, that it was that hard to separate the two. Like, we never let it get to us much, but we risked our whole life's earnings and everything we had built to start the Xfinity program and try to get to this level. And I think with that come the stress and you know, kind of, you know, laid out the groundwork to be able to figure out how to handle business like this and risk like this and still keep the personal relationship good. And it took, you know, in my opinion, 6 months to a year, maybe two to navigate it correctly. But we're definitely to a point where when we go home and we have our personal relationship. And then when we go to work, we're working. And it's honestly very impressive to me and interesting to see it work, like to see it happen. And it's a fun thing to navigate and enjoy.
Has it been hard for you to find the balance, or has it been pretty natural?
I mean, I feel like I'm a balanced person. I'm very structured. So no, I mean, to me, this is what I do. I get up, a lot of my life is working and I'm goal oriented. So usually we accomplish one goal and I'm already moving on to the next one. So that's how I operate.
So as I mentioned, right, I mean, you had basically been in this role, for lack of a better term, for years, over a decade or so. So why now? Why put a label on it now? Why come out with this news release now? Is it just a timing thing? Or did BJ say, you know what, let's make this happen? Or did something externally happen? I mean, what's up with the timing of this announcement?
And that's a good question. You know, on the BJ McLeod Motorsports side, I was an owner over there, so I knew my role. When we first started Live Fast last season, we were just trying to get everything going, and people wore multiple hats. You know, we're just trying to get everything going, head in the right direction, establishing ourselves. So I felt like this year, that's why it changed. We just decided, you know, to put the titles where they belong. Yeah. And that's what we did.
To add to that, for Matt and I, you know, to be clear, Matt was the first one to bring it up, mm-hmm. right? Like, we were just talking about things we were going to work on and try to do for the next year. And Matt and I both have felt, we had had conversations last year that we didn't like the amount of work and effort Jessica puts in, and she has no public presence for it, right? Like we didn't have titles. Like she said, we were struggling so hard just to get everything going and get, because small fish, big pond. Okay. Like we knew where we were. We're trying to make stuff happen. We don't just come in here and buy everything we want. Like we're trying to make our way. And we didn't get people designated correctly, because as she said, she wears two hats. I wear two or three. Matt wears two or three. You know, we have Dave Ingram at the shop that wears a couple. Like everybody does more than just one title. So as we were making things better through the off season, we're able to designate more per person and get it to where each person's doing closer to one job, not three. And Matt and I felt like to get her in a position publicly to where she can help make herself stronger and help us move the team to the next level, she needed the CEO title, because that's the work she's been doing. Okay. She already knows how to do that work and how to help us navigate the team. And she has helped steer Matt and I in certain directions just over the last 12 months that have helped us be better. And we wouldn't be at this level without her effort. And giving her the title was just something she had already earned, but it made it to where now when she walks through the garage, she can talk to other NASCAR executives, right? And other team executives. And they know where her role is in Live Fast. It's not a question. Everybody knows she works. Everybody knows that she helps run our business. Like, that's no question. But now they know what her role is, and she can have those conversations and start building her own networks to help us make our team go to the next level.
And that's what it's all about. It's all about the networking and learning from other people. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I feel like I learn something from everybody if you just start talking to them. And we all have different experiences, so.
So I'm never going to be a CEO of anything probably in my life. So you have a one up on me in that. What does the day-to-day look like for you as CEO? And I assume that the role that you have now is essentially the same day-to-day that you have had, mm-hmm. just with the title now on it. I mean, what consumes you day-to-day?
I mean, just how racing is. Racing is fast-paced, okay? So the back end of it is fast-paced, ever-changing, I feel like. There's a lot of planning that goes on. Planning just day-to-day, and then future planning yeah. that goes on. So that's a big deal. There's also the financial side of it, which is a big deal. So it all goes hand-in-hand, but that is what's happening on the back end, is a lot of planning and preparing. And we want to, with all of us, Matt, BJ, and myself, we want to get better. That's the same way we have approached the Xfinity side, the same way we're going to approach this side. And it's small changes. You just keep making the small changes that are needed, structure, organization-wise, performance-wise, and keep building.
And I feel like that's what you and Matt have always said, BJ, again, publicly, before Jessica came into the picture in a public sphere, is that you guys want to make incremental gains and get better week to week, and you're realistic about it, right? You're not going to go out there and win every week and run for top 10s at Daytona. You've done it, you have done it, and you will do it again, but you're realistic about the growth trajectory of this team, and I think that's where that sets you guys apart from the other side of the garage. You think that's fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, when I started thinking about being crazy enough to try to be an owner and make all this happen in 2006, she was right by my side, right? And I've watched scenarios where, you know, people come in and try to get those wins because we love what we do, right? Like, I want to be a winner. I don't by no means think I want to run 30th every week or 20th in Xfinity or, you know, whatever. But I also know I have to be here for a long amount of time with what I started with to be able to be successful. And to do that, you have to take small steps. I've watched some teams come in and spend money and win races, and then they don't build the partnerships correctly year over year. And then they have nothing left because the one good deal fell apart and they're out of business, you know, and that happens. A lifetime in this sport, sometimes for a team, is 5 years. You know, like if you make it 5 years, you've done very well. And it's, you know, you have your mega teams that have been here a quarter of a century or 35 years. And that's what I want to do. I want to make sure that we, Jessica and Matt and I, grow Live Fast at a pace that it can handle, that it can sustain itself being here, make progress year over year, and make sure that we're here for the long run, because that's the only way I'm going to get the W's that I want.
So obviously coming into this year, the whole thing that makes this thing go is the next gen car. And a lot of what the next gen car is built off of is helping teams like yours, helping them catch up to the big dogs with hundreds of employees and all the money in the world. So from your perspective so far, and I know it's really, really early, has the next gen car met your expectations as a team owner and a CEO?
So funny back end on this, I've actually was head on with our GM on ordering and purchasing with the next gen part. So it's been neat to watch it all come together from the very get-go, to be a part of that where it started, and then now we actually have this car, it's on the track, so that's been exciting. I do see what we were, you know, what we were thinking on this, that would help even the playing field. I do see where that's very possible, and we are excited to just get further into the season and see how that goes.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. For the first 2 months, she knew more about next gen than I did. Like, I'm completely serious with this. She was doing the ordering with our GM now, Davey, and he, you know, them two. I didn't honestly know what they were doing. Like, I'm trying to run Xfinity. Matt and I are trying to keep going with the Cup deal, and I'm driving, and I knew she can handle it. And with Davey, and it was funny because for a couple of months I didn't know some of the stuff she was talking about. Right, so I had to catch up, and it's a cool dynamic between the two of us. But you know, to add to what she was saying, there is no doubt in my mind that this is going to help equal the playing field. Okay, what I don't want people to think is you're going to see the small teams go out there and win four races in a row. That's not going to happen. Okay, I can tell you that right now. We're still building and trying to get there. And that is going to, I believe, create a quicker learning curve for those guys versus us with this next gen car. But the tight box, thankfully, that NASCAR has kept us in with this car, it has made it to where, yes, they'll figure out stuff a little bit faster than us, right? They'll have some advantages. I don't know if it's race 5 or if it's race 20 or if it's race 52, you know, 2 years down the road, when Live Fast Motorsports can all but catch up to having the same vehicle that a top 5 or a top 10 team has information-wise, because you can only use the resources for so long until the car is maxed out. Mm-hmm. Then we'll be looking at underneath the hood, making sure we can afford, build our partners year over year, and get to where we can lease engines every week. You know, that'll be the next step. And then from there, we just finish building our infrastructure, and you will see the gains of this car.
Jessica, do you get bogged down in the details of the actual racing on the track, or do you more so stay behind the scenes, as you mentioned, with the finances and trying to piece everything together and kind of let the on-track results and things happen as they do?
I'm more on the back end, although we discuss everything. So the three of us always, you know, take each point and discuss. So in the performance, we do, you know, talk about that together. As far as what the team's doing, how can we improve, but more so back end. Yeah. But the knowledge, yes, I do have knowledge of that side as well.
I want to focus on you outside of racing for a second. I know that you're a real estate agent and you're passionate in the gym, as are you, BJ. Is that something that you guys were able to bond over from an early time when you guys got together, the weightlifting aspect and fitness?
Yeah, actually, yes.
She drugged me in by my ankles.
Yeah, took him to the
she
gym.
She said, you're going to get in shape. I'm like, all right.
So you weren't always built like this?
No.
He did not train until he got
with me. It's funny, my mom wouldn't let me lift until I was 12 years old. All right. So I played around with weights a little bit, but I got with her when I was 19, and I always had wanted to lift, right? Like, I'd always wanted to get built and be, you know, because I was always strong. I was, you know, farm strong, pick up hay bales, right. Throw them, pick up.
Strong.
I could pick up an engine block and carry it across the shop when I was 10 years old. So it's like, I've always been like a stronger fella, but it was never gym strong, right? And never for physique or anything like that. And, you know, when I got with her, she's like, I can do all that. She was a personal trainer before I got with her, right? So I thought it was funny that, you know, I was like, all right, teach me. So, you know, we went in and started working out. We've worked out. We have our own gym now in our shop. Like, we love to do that together.
So, yeah, it is funny. You're a good client when I train him. I would say I'm not a good client for him, but he's good for me. So,
it works out so well. So we're here at Daytona. This is going to run after the 500. Looking ahead to the West Coast swing, there's obviously a lot of questions about parts and pieces, and I'm sure that you've dealt with them and continue to deal with those on an everyday basis. do you, and you, BJ, as well, do you guys ever have to think about the big picture while you're in the car and your helmet's strapped on and the engine's on? Like, does the owner mindset ever kick in, or when you're driver, are you all driver? You know what I mean?
Yeah, right now, I'm trying to, it was funny, I was thinking about it a couple hours ago. I'm glad you asked the question, because I think a new goal for me that I literally just come up with today is to get to where I can sit in the seat every single time I'm lucky enough to get in it, fortunate enough to be the driver, and just drive. Like, that's what I want to do, because I can't do that right now, and I haven't been able to do that. Like, my whole NASCAR career, I've had to protect my vehicles. Didn't have enough money to replace them. Like, you know, now, fortunately, we're in a lot better spot, and yes, we can replace them. But it's more of a time constraint now, because I don't want to put us behind because I tear up a car. It's not really a financial decision. Yeah. It's more of just, we need to keep these things together so we can learn as much as we can to try to catch up as quick as possible, right, to be able to be more successful quicker, right? So, you know, I think a new personal goal for me that literally is, you know, last couple hours is I want to, however many more years I can drive, I want to get to where every time I get in the seat, I can just drive and whatever happens, happens, right? And that's something that it'll take another year, probably a year and a half for me to accomplish. But I can tell you right now, the writing's on the wall that we'll be able to do that. And that'll be something that I'm looking forward to, because I am at heart a racer. I was first a racer, and I will always be a racer. But to get to the level that we've managed to get to, I had to sacrifice some things, and that meant getting in a car and taking care of equipment. I was willing to do it. And fortunately, I had the talent to do it, and the restraint, and, you know, be the foresight to be able to take care of stuff. But I want some years to just raise hell and have fun before I'm done, right?
So. I'd say you deserve that, yeah.
And I agree. That's what I want for him, too. And I know it's hard. I know that side of him. So I know it's hard to get in the car and not think about all the things after he's out of the car. So I want that for him as well.
Yeah. I'll end with this. This year is unpredictable for a lot of reasons, but I know, as we mentioned, incremental gains is something that you guys are after. So I'll start with you, Jessica. What do you think is a successful season for the 78 team this year? Can you put a number on it in terms of point standings or tangible results, or is it more so something that you'll figure out as the year goes on?
Well, I mean, it definitely is something you're going to figure out as the season goes on, especially being a new car. But I know what goals we do have, and you know, we would like to stay around the 31st, I would say, position. And that is our goal. But I do know there's going to be a lot of variables that's going to come into play with it. And we're just going to be prepared to, you know, attack them and see what we can do to get headed that direction if we're not.
BJ, I know you'll probably be in the car for a lot of, if not most, of the races. Is that a similar goal that you share, around the 30th place or so for the point standings?
Yeah, like she said, it's, you know, it's hard to tell till the season gets rolling. One thing that's underlying right now that not a lot of people are paying attention to is that the Cup Series is the most competitive front to back it's been since I've been paying attention to it, you know, as an owner, the last 8 to 10 years, right? Like, we have leased engines and alliances all the way back to 35th. There's 36 charters, right? So, you know, it really, 36 have alliances. Okay. So it's, we aren't leasing engines every week. We do have some races that we are leasing that's going to help us. But, you know, if you look at it from a strict financial position that we're in and what we budgeted this year, we're definitely in that 32nd to 36th range, right? Like, there's nothing on paper that says we should run 31st. Okay. But, you know, we also like to set a goal that's a little bit, you know, hard to reach, and we may fail, okay? But we like to do that together just to try to shoot to get that, because if we can finish 31st in points, we did a heck of a job. And it's cool for – I'm excited for NASCAR, because the whole goal with the charter system and the cars and everything was to get it to where – 36 cars are competitive. If there's open cars, there's 40 cars that are competitive. No, there's still lap down cars. Okay. That's not, it doesn't mean you're not competitive, right? But it's a tight field, and it's a lot of entertainment for the fans. And this year is going to be the best for that I have seen since I've been an owner. So looking forward to it.
I think you're one of the most respected drivers in the field, and I think you have been now publicly, but even before this title became public, one of the most respected private owners in that space in the garage. So it's been great getting to know you guys a little bit better and talk to you, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot from you this year. Maybe another top 10 here at Daytona. You never know. Who knows?
Hell, we're going for the W Sunday. You never know, man. See who's left standing at the end. That's what it's about. But right. Always enjoy talking to you, and thanks for sitting down with us.
Yep, Florida's finest. We'll see how it goes.
Checkered Flag is out on the podcast. Big, big thank you to BJ and Jessica for obviously the time and a busy week that was Daytona Speed Week. And also thank you to Autumn at Live Fast Motorsports for helping coordinate that conversation. Very, very nice and easy to work with, Autumn, who is new to the sport, so welcome. And thank you again for helping coordinate. And thanks to BJ and Jessica for the time. Great catching up with them, as always. Let's bring Zach back into the fold here. Let's talk a little Auto Club Speedway. It's the first time that NASCAR is heading there in two full years. We just went to LA, but now we're going to Fontana, which is obviously the, I guess you can say, Walmart LA of NASCAR. It's not actually in LA, but it's in that market, you can say. I'm kind of excited to see what the track's going to race like because, A, we haven't seen it in a couple years, but B, NASCAR said that they're going to be applying a little bit of resin to the track surface, which was not met with great pleasure from the drivers and from industry members because Auto Club has been and is one of the tracks that you can go all over top to bottom and it can put on a great show. I don't know how the resin is going to work there, but I'm interested to see how it plays out. And I'm glad that we're finally going back to Fontana because one of the best tracks on the schedule.
So happy to actually see this track back on the schedule. I mean, last time we were there was 2020. Jimmy Johnson's last race there. Alex Bowman gets the win.
Alex Bowman wins, and he curses another track. There you go.
Listen, I didn't say it.
Dover, Chicago, Richmond losing a playoff date. Auto Club. Yep. Am I missing any? I don't think so.
Pocono. I think. Did you say Pocono?
Yeah, yep. I didn't, but there you go.
Yep, there it is.
Curse of Bowman.
Anyway, Auto Club always puts on phenomenal racing. I'm curious to see what this car race is like on a track as wide as this one. Will guys be able to run up top? How much of that ability is going to be impacted by the resin on the surface? They've also ground the bumps on the back straightaway, I believe. So that should take away some of the abrasiveness, which I think is, as much as I love a track with character, I feel like with as severe as the bumps were, it's probably a good call.
And I think that was more so because of the rear diffuser and how low that sits to the ground in the next-gen car.
Yes, that's a great point, too, because these cars in the rear do sit much lower, even though the nose sits up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So all of those things coming together, it makes for a very interesting weekend coming up. We will see a little bit of practice and qualifying session, and then we'll go into the race on Sunday.
Yes, we will. Let's talk a little bit more about that track specifically because, again, there's all this talk about Auto Club becoming a short track. It's going to renovate itself or, well, the land's really valuable. Are they going to sell the land? Is this the last race at Auto Club on the 2 mile? Is it the last race at Auto Club, period? What is going to happen to that racetrack? The answer is we don't know. And whether or not track president Dave Allen knows, he wasn't saying, but I kind of got the sense that in LA when we talked to him at the Clash, he generally did not know as well, or genuinely, I should say. There's a lot of moving parts and pieces with supply chain, as annoying as that is to say over and over again, and legislation and all these different things. The point is, I think that this track is great as a 2 mile venue. I think if they go ahead and revamp it into a short track, it's going to be great that way. But a lot of the drivers would rather them just keep it the way it is because, again, it has so much character and this is the way that it's been for so many years and it's put on a great show. Where do you land on the track reconfiguration aspect to Auto Club, if it happens or if it doesn't?
Well, I agree in that there's so many more unknowns than knowns right now, which is kind of bizarre because this plan to go to a short track, I believe, was announced in 2020, at the end of 2020. I could be wrong on that. But, this has been something that's been on the table for quite some time, and there haven't been any updates. And Dave Allen did address the media while we were in Los Angeles at the Clash. And again, I left that press conference with more questions than answers as far as what the future for that definitely looks like. I think the advantage for Auto Club, and maybe this is what they're relying on, is that the LA Coliseum really gives them a chance to procrastinate and kind of just keep the ball in the air for now, because if they can do a short track in that market without tearing down parts of Auto Club to make it happen, then does Auto Club need to become a short track, or can we just race in the Clash every couple of years? Mm-hmm. If it's that, then great. But something is going to have to be decided, obviously soon, to figure out what the next steps are.
A lot of questions, not a whole lot of answers, but hopefully time will tell on that, and hopefully Auto Club remains on the schedule in some form or fashion. Zach, this is the checkered flag segment of the podcast, and you guys have probably seen by now, because by the time this episode's out, the news is public, but Zach has taken his checkered flag with his time at frontstretch.com. I'm so happy for you. I'm so stoked for you, and I'm so sad to see you leave, because not only will you not be a guest on the pod anymore, but I won't be able to see you and talk to you on an everyday basis in a professional setting. We still will as friends, but I'm going to stop rambling. Tell the people where you're going, what you're doing, and how this opportunity came about for you.
I am so, so thankful and grateful to announce that I am now writing for NASCAR on NBC, NASCAR Talk, working on NASCAR.com. Still, I'm doing some work with them as a freelancer, but also working for NBC alongside the phenomenal team, Dustin Long, Nate Ryan, and Chris Estrada. It's going to be a blast, honestly. I am so, so thankful for my time at Front Stretch, and I wrote about that earlier this week. Check that out.
Zach's turn Front Stretch to say goodbye.
You did give it that first read, by the way, so thanks for that.
I did, yes.
While we were sitting in our Airbnb. And,
the least Ormond I can Beach do Florida. For you filming my ass all weekend.
Yeah, thankfully I got your face a little bit more often.
That's why you left, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm so grateful. So grateful for Front Stretch. You know, I was able to go to 7 races last year, and as well as the Clash and Daytona 500 this year. The opportunity came around toward the end of January. I had some conversations about an opening, and fortunately enough, everything went through, and here I am sitting with you tonight on Wednesday, and I've already got a byline out there. So
hell yeah.
Here we are.
I'm so happy for you. I actually have your first article about Trevor Bayhn open on my computer right now. I'm going to read it as soon as we hang up. But as cliche as it is, you have been one of, if not my favorite teammate of all time at Front Stretch. All the different little inside jokes that we have, they're not going to go away. But they will live on in Front Stretch lore forever because of you, my friend. So I'm so happy for you. One of the I said to the group at dinner, how would I describe Zach? What did I say? Unapologetically, like, nice, kind, like, goes out of his way all the time. What else did I say? I definitely gave you crap for a couple of things, right?
Oh, you did.
Makes great race car noises, right? That was one. I don't remember the last one, but you get my point.
I don't know.
You're great.
I do say sorry too much. We've established that.
I was actually going to say, don't say sorry as much as you do, because you have nothing to be sorry about. But I mean every word of it. You're the man. We love you. I love you. And I'm so excited to see what you do at NBC. And we still remain coworkers to a certain degree. So there's that. Go Peacock.
Go Peacock. You got the DC borough covered.
Yes, we got RSN over here. We got big-time motorsports guy over there. So the Peacock is well represented on this podcast. But I wanted to have Zach on because this is probably the last time that Zach will be on the Front Stretch podcast. So it's been great. It's been a wonderful ride, and he's crying right now. So I'm gonna let him say a parting word and close out the show as he has closed out his time at Front Stretch. The floor is yours, my friend.
Thank you to everyone who is listening to this and everyone who reads our content on frontstretch.com. It means more than you know. Please keep following everyone at this site. Everyone here does an amazing job. We've got Davey, obviously, here on the pod, as well as what he does on his social media at Davey Center on Twitter. Ryan Nolan and Adam G keep killing it with their Stock Car Scoop podcast.
But stop spamming the group text as much as they do. I'm not even in it, and I get annoyed how much they spend on it.
There's way more truth to that than I care to admit. Daniel McFadden consistently putting out award-winning work. We saw that happen. And then Michael Massey, our content director here, and Monday Night Racing superstar.
Hey.
It's fantastic. And I can't say enough about the leaders here on the site as well that work with Mike.
Tommy!
Yeah, Tom Bowles. I mean, there's not enough that I can
do
to thank him. Right. It's like he gave me an opportunity to really push this NASCAR dream forward, and I'm very fortunate to be able to reap those benefits right now. Kevin Rutherford and Beth Lunkenheimer as well do an amazing job to keep this site functional, because there's a lot of dysfunction personal chats. But it, man, it all comes together for an amazing product, and I can't wish this site enough of good luck. It is just been such a fun thing to be part of, and so grateful for it all.
Well said. Bye.
Bye. It's been nice, and thank you for everything, buddy. It's been such a pleasure to be able to work with you and film you. We probably went through 12 videos last week alone.
Oh, at least.
At least, right?
And you made me look damn good.
Hey, listen, I try.
Somebody tells you.
It ain't always easy.
See you never.
See you, buddy.